Okay, we have everyone here. Let's go ahead and get started. Our agenda is here. On the agenda today, we have design issues with relative IRIs and compaction, potential ambiguity when setting a default language, issue 211, the approach that we should take to the algorithms, remaining editorial work for the JSON-LD 1.0 spec, just to make sure that the editors are on the same page as what is getting added or removed from the spec or shifted around. And then an editor-author attribution order discussion that was triggered yesterday, just to see what the order of the editors and the authors should be for both specs. We have another addition from Marcus, which relates to whether or not one of the test suite test cases, what the output of that test case should be, because there's some, Dave Longley's been implementing this stuff and disagreed with what the output should be. Where do you want to discuss that on the agenda, Marcus? Towards the beginning, towards the end?
I don't really mind. It's, I mean, it's not that important. It's a minor detail, so probably towards the end.
Okay, let's push it off towards the latter part of the call. We're going to need to discuss it at some point. But, like you said, it's not a major issue. Okay, any other changes or additions to the agenda today? I am up to scribe, so I will be doing that as well. Okay, first up is a design issue that we hit with relative IRIs and compaction. Let me pull up the discussion on that here. So the major issue is that as Dave Lonely was implementing the latest JSON-LD algorithms, and he's been actually implementing them from both Marcus and Greg's versions, he's been reading both and deciding which one he likes better and implementing that. In some cases, implementing completely new algorithms, although that has been rare at this point. So when he went to implement the relative IRI and the compaction stuff, he reminded me that that is going to completely break the web payments stuff, a feature that we were depending on in web payments, and that was that we want to be able to use terms on the right-hand side of JSON-LD object. So basically, as we want to use terms in type, but we also want to use terms for other variables. So for example, if we had, let me put something in here. If we had something like, if we had something like this, and we wanted it to expand out to, if we wanted to expand out to that, we can't do that right now because of the decision we made last week, because we took terms out as a possibility.
Well, but the whole why is an IRI, a relative IRI, considered, just because it has the form of a term? I mean, it's a term if it's defined as a term in the context. So I understood it, the decision was that we're not going to allow defined terms. But if flat amount was not a defined term, if it was just treated as a IRI relative to, I don't know, in this case, what is it, relative to the document or to a vocabulary?
It's relative to the document base if vocab doesn't exist.
So it's relative to the so it's a relative IRI. It's not a term. It just has the form of a term.
I'm not following. So the issue is that we have flat amount defined in the context as a term.
Oh, okay.
Well, we just made a decision that IDs could not be terms. That was the decision we made last week.
Yes.
I I'm sorry, Nicholas, you're on the queue.
I was sort of anticipating this. I wasn't sure that anybody needed something like this in JSON LD, so I haven't talked more about it. I alluded to it when I mentioned in the discussion leading up to this that we might want a new keyword called something like symbol or to the effect of being term or QRI or IRI. If this is a needed use case, and as you've shown, you have used this approach. So that would be my suggestion. I would not want to revert the decision on ID itself because of the problems with relative IRIs, and we did that to stay aligned with the treatment of values in the resource attribute of RDFA. If you want something for type coercion which corresponds to RDFA, we need a new keyword which would have the value range the same as the lexical scope being the same as what we in RDFA call term or QRI or IRI.
We already do support QRIs, right?
QRI or IRI, but that's the same as the QRI or IRI lexical scope for the resource attribute in RDFA. And the reason you can't mix in terms in that is because they will collide with URI or IRI resolution in relative terms. Whereas QRIs don't have that problem because you can't have relative terms. You can't have relative IRIs where you have something which looks like a prefix. In the IRI spec, you have to precede that with something like slash or dot slash. But there is nothing to guard against that for terms, which is why in RDFA we have a distinction.
So your proposal is that we add... I guess I'm confused as to what you're proposing, Nicholas. So I don't understand how adding something like add symbol or whatnot would solve this issue.
Because you would declare the data type for rate type, the rate type property to be a symbol. Previously, used ID. And that would also, although type has some magic behavior, but previously we have said that type is sort of like, I'll type it out, sort of like something with ID, RDF type, and type being ID, like that. But we can't read it like that anymore, so there is no way to sort of fake the type behavior with something else, unless we do something like perhaps that. I'm not sure symbol is the right term, but I think that it's useful.
Yeah, and unfortunately we're adding a little bit more complexity here. One of the things I'm concerned about is that this relative IRI stuff is not, I guess it fundamentally, I don't think it's very useful. It causes more harm than it helps, I think. Go ahead, Nicholas.
I think it's common practice. If people will represent their IRIs or URLs, which they already publish, in very different ways all over the web, and they want to just put that into JSON and add a context, the previous behavior of ID to scoop up relative IRIs which happen to match terms is dangerous. It conflates the value spaces too much, in my opinion. I think it's a dangerous path.
Yet it's done in RDFA and Turtle and most every other RDF serialization.
Every RDFA is almost too close. If you recall my uncomfort with the QRI risks, that was what I could bear. But terms is kind of over the top for my very sensitive mind or whatever I am representing.
But you're okay with having relative IRIs. For instance, you might do, you know, a resource equals hash this.
Yes.
Is it because it begins with a hash? If it was just resource equals this, you would have a problem? You wouldn't. But is it a relative IRI that has the form of a term? Although
that's
I'm not sure that hash is hash an illegal thing to use in a term definition. I'm not sure that it is.
I don't think you can use it as a term. It would be awkward.
I think you can use any string just about.
Yeah. You can. I mean, you would be able to use that as a term easily.
Well, people probably won't because it would make data very hard to read.
Yeah, so the question is, do we try to create it so that we protect users from themselves or not?
Mm-hmm.
I think if we do that, there's no ends to that. So the same argument could then go about relative URIs.
Well, if you use contexts which define terms like that, that's... But, I mean, this is here because many relative IRIs are just plain words, and all the terms being defined are regular plain words. People won't understand what hits them until very much later on. And if a context which is out of band, defined out of band, suddenly adds a term, unless we specify that you must put dot slash in front of relative terms, relative IRIs.
But that seems to get past what Mono really wants it to look like a term. Because that, as I gather from what you were saying, Mono, is the way that people understand these things.
Well, it is actually a... Let's see. So there are two things that were said that are important. One of them is to put dot slash on it, and I wrote a little something about that in the issue. Mainly that we can only do that for things that are certain schemes like HTTP. We wouldn't be able to do it for other schemes like ISBN or any of those URNs.
Those schemes aren't hierarchical, so you can't resolve things relatively in those schemes anyway.
True.
That's a good point. So I'd be fine with the dot slash thing, or that all IRIs that are made into relative IRIs have dot slash prepended to them. That would be perfectly fine in my book. And then we don't have a possibility of accidentally compacting down to a term. So that's one. And then the second thing is what Greg said, and that was that what we want is for these things to look like terms. And just to clarify, these things like rate type are basically constants, and we use the constant is an IRI. So we use an IRI to define what the constant is. Flat amount is a constant rate type. So we want fundamentally what we want is for people to just look at it and just say, oh yeah, it's JSON, instead of looking at it and going, why is that colon in the middle? Why is it com colon rate, you know, flat amount? Why is it, you know, PS colon flat amount? So that's the goal. We don't want to make this stuff abrasive to general web developers. Just to clarify what Greg said. I don't know if that helped.
Yeah. Now, how would dot slash work if you were trying to use a hash relative IRI? Because clearly dot slash hash this would not be correct.
It would, wouldn't it?
Well, it might be,
right.
but often the hash sort of gets appended rather than it doesn't replace the final term.
I remember us needing to do something like that in our RDFA processors. We needed to check to see what the relative, if base had a hash in it, then we needed to strip off the hash. Basically, we needed to do fragment processing on the
When you do IRI resolution, the hash isn't taken into account unless it's not taken into account. So you have to have a fragment in the local part in order for the resulting IRI to be a hash IRI.
I guess a similar would be using the empty string to denote the document location. What you would have to do is .slash, presuming that you needed that. Actually, that doesn't work, right? Because .slash is not the same thing. So
no.
I don't think this .slash is any kind of a... It doesn't help.
Well, .dot would be, but if you want to just have that.
Well, you can't have .dot without the .slash, because otherwise it... You mean .foo.
No, that's just an empty. You should use the empty then. But the thing is that, if we defined, if there wasn't a heritage and a pattern existing for treatment and publishing links, the simpler solution would be to say that if you use relative IRIs, use dot slash. But since that's not the case, and web documents have been published since the beginning of the web with just words in links being... If you have the document publication and then you have another document called license, you would in the two documents link to each other quite often using just the words license and publication. And if one of those ends up being defined as a term and you just use the same code to publish JSON as you did before with the same relative IRIs, you would end up changing.
So that seems like a reasonable thing to do in JSON-LD as well. I think I might have done that, for instance, in some cases where I have several contexts in one directory, and I can reference another context by just using its file name, if you will.
Yeah.
Okay. So... I think there's very strong support for supporting relative IRIs in JSON-LD. So I will back off of that point. Marcus, you're in the queue.
I just wanted to ask you why you can't use queries if it's really, if you treat it like a constant. I mean, if it's a constant, it doesn't matter how it looks like, or does it?
What do you mean? Like we would use something like... a flat amount colon?
Well,
or
something like
case warm colon flat amount.
We've already passed it by folks and they don't like it. Basically, they're a group of web developers that get very confused when they see colon in there. In that we need to start explaining what a query is to them, and we'd rather not have to do that.
I understand that if you say the key of the property, if that's a query of, or if that contains a colon, but the value, I mean...
Yeah, the value as well.
So you can't say the constant is just that string?
That's what we've been doing to date, and people have been pushing against it since the beginning.
Okay.
Because on the left-hand side, there basically the argument is, well, you don't have to do that on the left-hand side. Why do you have to do that on the right-hand side, right? And we could either have the discussion that we just did right now, which I don't think really helps people. It doesn't ease people's minds about the technology being complicated, right? If we have a discussion about relative IRIs and fragment processing and all that kind of stuff, most web developers' eyes just gloss over because they're like, oh, so you're telling me that this is really complicated. And we would rather not give that impression when somebody starts looking at the messages and data, the JSON-LD messages and data that are being passed around the network. So you're right, we could do that, but it comes at a fairly steep cost to developers understanding the spec.
Well, the thing I mean is that they don't even have to know that the right-hand side is an IRI in reality. I mean, it could just be a string which happens to be a constant.
Yeah, or, that's true, but that's kind of a... That is true. Although we're concerned that if other rate types get added in there, that you would need to have some kind of centralized mechanism to do the extension for that. If you see what I mean, like it has the same problem that JSON has on the web today. Is that okay? Well, then now all the developers need to agree on which text string to use, and if the systems, if this is a decentralized system and it's being built in parallel by a whole bunch of different developers on the web, there's going to be a point at where two people conflict. So we'd rather use IRIs for that.
Isn't that actually an argument for queries here? So
that
you have a namespace for those terms?
Well, yes, but I already explained why queries don't work.
Yeah.
Right. So the queries are, yes, it is an argument for queries, but when the query argument is presented to a web developer that doesn't care about linked data, they reject it and say, look, just make it map to an IRI just like you make the terms on the left-hand side map to an IRI. I don't see why you can't do that. And I think Nicholas has proposed a way we could do that, but the whole query on the right-hand side, no query on the left-hand side is throwing people.
So... I'm confused because terms are restricted as the value of an ID. In this case, you're using a term as the value of a property. So just the fact that you might use an ID form as the value of a property, it doesn't sound like something you'd want to do. So I'm not exactly sure what the problem is.
When you expand, it is an ID, right?
No, yes, and it's an absolute IRI. Expands to an absolute IRI.
It doesn't. We took that out.
No, I'm again confused then.
Okay, so if we have this foo, and then blah, right, and then blah, and then in the context we have blah.
Oh, you're saying that the definition of blah is a relative IRI in the context.
I'm saying this. So, hold on. Vocab hash blah. So I'm saying if we have that in the context, and then we have foo is, this is going to take HTTP example org vocab hash blah. Then type ID. If we have this, so we have those two things in the context, the blah and the foo. And if we do foo blah there, it's not going to expand to vocab blah. It's going to expand as a relative IRI to the local document, which is what we don't want.
I don't understand why.
Because we said that IDs cannot be a term. IDs used to be able to be a term, but last week we made a decision to remove terms from the possibility. Terms cannot. The value of an ID must be an absolute IRI, a relative IRI, or a query. It used to read it could also be a term, but we removed that last week.
Yes, I know that, but. Uh-huh. That's not the case here. You're not constructing a document where a term is the value of the ID. You're constructing it that contains, in this case, a foo blah, and blah is defined to be example org vocab blah. foo is example org vocab foo. Its form is an ID, so therefore it expands to example org vocab foo colon at ID example org vocab blah, right? So
yeah, that would be great if that's true, but I don't think
why enough. Isn't that the case?
Because the expanded form for that?
I mean, I've implemented this stuff a fair amount, and it seems to me that's what my processor would do.
Yeah, that's what our processor used to do. But Dave Longley is saying that. I mean, and I agree.
I don't know why it wouldn't expand to that.
See what Marcus just typed into IRC.
Well, yes, it is equivalent to that, but that is illegal. Because
why is that illegal?
That's illegal because blah is a term and the value of ID. So, but when I'm expanding, of course, I'm expanding everything into absolute IRIs. So the expanded form is not illegal. The compacted form would be illegal if foo did not have a type of ID. Or if it didn't have a type of ID, then you would have to say foo. You would have to use this form, which would be illegal.
Okay, so then can we, can we compact that down, back down the law?
Yeah, you can compact it back down to law as long as the property has a type of ID.
Which it does.
So, again, I don't really see what the problem is.
If that's your read on the rules, then that's fine with me, but that was not the decision that I thought we made last week.
Well, the decision I thought we made is that you can't have a term as the value of an ID. And we're not having the term. This does not involve using the term as the value of an ID.
Well, if you type course it to ID, isn't that equivalent?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
At least that's my interpretation of it.
Well, equivalent. Yes, but if I was, semantically they mean the same thing, but it's an illegal syntactic form. If it wasn't illegal, then they would expand to the same thing. But they would not compact. It'll compact back to just using blah. If foo has a type of ID. If it didn't have a type of ID, then it would compact down to something, to a, what we used to call a node reference, and you could not compact then that back down to blah, because that would be illegal.
I'm not sure.
So if foo was defined with type XSD integer, then you would have to, but you wanted to now use foo referencing an IRI, then you'd have to use the long form for you'd have to use the object form for the IRI.
Okay, so it sounds like we don't necessarily agree on the I see the train of logic, Greg. I think the issue is that we're talking about, some of us are talking about semantic equivalence and others are talking about syntactic equivalence. So you're talking about syntactic equivalence, and I think Marcus, myself, and Dave Longley are talking about semantic equivalence.
When we make the rule that a term cannot be the value of ID, it seems to me we're talking about the syntax. You're not saying that a term cannot be used in the the subject location or the object location? I'm not exactly sure it would be in this case.
Mm-hmm. I mean, if that's the reasoning, I'm totally fine with it. I just want to make sure all of us agree on that.
It seems to me that resolves this conundrum that we spent 33 minutes on,
mm-hmm.
that there really isn't a problem.
That's exactly the same problem why we disabled it for at ID, because you can, because a relative IRI could be mistaken for a term or vice versa. I think the value of a property, even if it's type cursed to SID, is when you process it exactly the same as if you process the value of etID. So don't think we can distinguish these two cases here.
Well, when I voted on this, I voted assuming we were talking about a syntactic restriction of using a term as the on the right-hand side of an ID, not a term in any place where it might be interpreted as an ID other than as a property or type. So I would change my vote.
Okay. Well, I think all of us, like Manu, Niklas, and me, voted by meaning the same thing. So the value of a property or the value of that ID.
No, so I would change my vote because I didn't realize at the time that this would cause this amount of an issue.
But
I think we're at it.
Wouldn't the simplest technical solution be to just compact to a relative IRI if there is no term which collides, as we do with cures, for example, so we check
we
that there is a cure defined.
Yeah, and kick out a warning or an error or not compact
just
the IRI.
Not compacted.
Okay, so the issue with not compacting, at least Dave Longley's issue with not compacting, is that you could end up with most of them compacted and two or three of them not compacted.
At least it would be quite obvious why it didn't compact. I mean,
it's not a good idea.
I'm not saying it's a good idea, but it's quite easy to debug those cases where it didn't compact.
Greg, what do you consider the difference between the example I just wrote there, where in the one hand you have foo and explicit node reference blah
versus just foo and blah? If foo is coerced to an ID, and we didn't have this restriction, they would both expand to the same thing.
Yeah, but given this restriction, only the second
given this restriction, yes, only the second would expand, because the first would be deemed as a syntactic error. Or not I don't know.
But
that's a
very strange design to allow the actual value space of foo in the second example is the value space of ID. And if the value space of ID is treated differently depending on how ID is used, that sounds like murky territory.
Well, I think we're consistent in the case that every time you have a key of ID, the value may not be a term. But in the foo colon blah, the key is not ID, the key is foo. And just it gets the ID form when it's expanded.
It's still syntactical. It's just a different way. It's a shorthand for the same syntactical expression.
Yeah, I agree with Niklas on that. It's basically
it is a shorthand.
It
is a shorthand for the same syntactic expression. You're right. But I just think that the problem we had was specifically for the value of ID, because ID had a specific meaning. Well,
I think the problem remains. If you try to represent some plain old JSON where you have a link reference where you, as in our previous discussion, use the relative terms, and you have two documents, publisher and license, and they reference each other, and suddenly one of those or two of those are defined as terms, i.e. someone uses Dublin Core terms, then suddenly they don't link to each other anymore. They link to the properties themselves.
Yeah. Then is the only way to solve Manu's problem to completely reverse the whole thing and allow terms to be the value of ID?
We could also do what Niklas proposed. That would be a clean solution, but it would add complexity to the language.
Yeah, I'm not happy about adding new keywords like that.
Yep.
I also think it's
well, we already have the lexical space. We just don't have a symbol representing it.
Okay, so we have burned 40 minutes on this issue. We should probably table it, take it back to the issue tracker, and put a couple proposals in there, and move on. Any objections?
No.
Okay, so there are two potential solutions here, what Nicholas proposed, and adding a term back into the allowed types. Or ID. Okay. Next on the agenda is issue 211. Hopefully this is going to be much easier to resolve. Potential ambiguity when setting a default language. I think that we have most of the people on the call said that there is no, or their interpretation of the ambiguity is the same, meaning that we don't believe there is an ambiguity, and the algorithms are fairly clear on it. So we could potentially just close issue 211, noting that the algorithms are clear on this particular topic. Marcus, do you want to give a bit of background on the issue before we do anything like that, though?
I think everyone read the issue because everyone commented on it. So basically it's whether we bind properties which don't have a specific language to the default language at their definition time, or whether we take the default language into the consideration as soon as the term is used. And currently we use the default language as soon as the term is used, and I think everyone agreed that that's what's intended. And the algorithms are written that way, but perhaps we should add, I don't know, a statement, one or two sentences to the syntax spec where we describe that feature to make sure that, well, it's also included there. But other than that, I think we don't need to do anything.
So then the proposal would be make it clear in the syntax spec that the default language is active. The default language is used. Well, what is the wording on this? Make it clear that if a default language is set in the active context, literals that would otherwise be plain literals become language tag literals, and just say that in the syntax spec instead of the API or the algorithm spec.
Well, I mean, we already say it's possible to find a default language for a document by setting language in the context.
Yeah, I think that's pretty clear. I don't know if we need to put anything else in there.
I would also be fine with just closing it, if you think it's clear enough. I haven't checked the details. So.
Okay.
I'd say that's the way to go.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, so that we don't need to do a proposal for that. Let's just close issue 211, because there's general agreement to close it. Okay, next up is the approach to the algorithms. I don't know how much headway we can make on the approach to the algorithms this week, mainly because Dave Longley's still kind of going through this stuff, and I think he has volunteered to kind of merge the work he's been doing, Marcus has done, and Greg's been doing, and his merge would be based on the implementations that he's done. So it would be an implementation, it would be a solid implementation behind it.
If Dave's going in the route of using a reverse context, which I can certainly understand is a reasonable choice for an implementation, my real concern was how understandable that makes the algorithms when walking through. But if that can be resolved without and still make them basically humanly processable, then I'd be fine with that approach.
Yeah,
so I suggest let's just table this until we have some more progress.
Yeah. Sorry, I'm describing what you said. So just a quick update. So the major concern that Dave Longley has looked at all the algorithms in detail now, and he's very close to finishing off the last bit of implementation in the JavaScript one. And then he's going to switch over to doing the PHP and the Python implementations at that point. The main concerns that he had is that it's very difficult to understand what the algorithms are supposed to do just by reading a summary at the top of the algorithms. So his proposal is that we have just a very simple block of text at the top of each of the algorithms that say, this is the purpose of the algorithm. You know, it's meant to transform. You take this data as input and you generate this data as output. So all of the algorithms need to effectively state that in a very simple, high-level way. Dave Longley, he ended up using a modification on Marcus's inverse context, so he was able to simplify it. He feels quite a bit to the point that it's very easy to explain in prose. So he'll go ahead and add that prose so everyone can kind of look at it. He did take me through it and explain it to me yesterday, and it did seem much simpler. More than likely, Marcus, it might be just a matter of instead of creating that multi-level map and showing people what the multi-level map is, we might want to, I think Dave Longley said it would be simpler if we just converted it into an algorithm and had the algorithm give you the most proper term back. So that way people wouldn't need to necessarily understand the entire data structure. They can just kind of follow via simple, you know, if-then-else statements like what Greg has in his spec.
That's probably going into the direction I posted to the mailing list, I think.
Yeah, and that brings us to the other thing, which is what you posted to the mailing list. Both Dave Longley and I really like that direction. And I think that is certainly a step in the right direction, and I think we definitely need to do that as much as we can in the algorithms. The main concern, and I think Dave Longley is going to take that and run with it and you know, put basically kind of try and reorganize a lot of the algorithms in that way. He said that he thinks that he can simplify many of the algorithms by about 20% to 30%, reducing the amount of text and making the selections a little easier, making the logic a little easier. And one of the other things, I know this is a big brain dump, but one of the other things that we also discussed was using a ladder-based mechanism. So I don't know if you guys have seen the IRI spec, but it has a ladder-based comparison on how you see if two IRIs are equivalent. Like the first thing is just to do a syntactic case-by-case comparison, and then it's to do, I think it's scheme-based comparison comes next, and then semantic IRI comparison comes after that. So whenever things are kind of ordered like that, it makes it much easier to understand. Because Dave Longley was saying we need to switch a lot of the algorithms to basically just take the simplest, most common case and jump out of the algorithm whenever we find our solution, instead of, you know, having to read and process the entire algorithm. That might help a bit with people being able to understand the algorithms. In any case, I think the final thing that Dave's going to end up putting in there is that he is going to try and combine what Marcus and Greg have done along with what I just outlined, and come up with a set of texts that definitely has an implementation behind it, a verified implementation behind it, and then we can kind of take a look at it and then, you know, go over it all over again. Unfortunately, I think this is just we're not going to be able to get the last call with the API spec by the end of this month. It's just there's too much stuff up in the air. So I think the goal here is to try and get the syntax spec into last call by the end of this month. Okay.
Just a quick question.
Sure.
For the last call, do the algorithms have to be, I mean, if the outcome doesn't change at all, does it matter if we simplify them later, after
yes
last call
no.
or in last call?
Usually when you're in last call, it tells people that they could. It's not supposed to tell people that they can start implementing, but people usually do start implementing at that point. And I think it would be. It's a gray area, Marcus. So we could enter into last call and then decide that we could rewrite the algorithms in a better way, but the risk that we run is that we end up modifying the algorithm such that one of the corner cases that we don't really care about is not supported, or we support a new corner case. And at that point, it becomes a fairly substantive change, and at that point, we have to go through another last call. So the general idea is let's not risk having to go through another last call. Let's just make sure that the API is fairly solid, and we have general agreement among the editors that that's the API that we want, that the algorithms that we want going into last call. Because if we don't have agreement between us, the likelihood that we're going to have to go through another last call is higher. So I'd say we just, you know, bite the bullet, eat the 2 or 3 weeks that it's going to take us to finalize the algorithms, and then go into last call after that. That makes sense, Marcus?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I'm not that familiar with the process, then. So I don't know if we can go to last call anytime we are ready, or if there are just certain.
We can go to last call anytime we're ready. It's okay. Basically, we're going to tell the RDF working group that we're ready to go to last call, and then they're going to review the spec, and if they agree, then we'll go to last call. And that can happen at any point.
I think the concern that the RDFWG had was in renewing their charter and wanting to make sure that sort of enough work is done that substantiates a continuation to complete. In with respect to what we're doing, certainly having a syntax doc out and a feeling that the API is close behind, I think pretty much is consistent with that.
Yeah. So I mean, we're not saying that we believe there are another, you know, 2 or 3 or 4 months of work to go into the algorithms. We're saying that look, we know what the output should be. We're just trying to make it simple and easy to understand at this point. With a potential risk that we might change something substantive to make it easier to understand. And we'd rather do that before we go into last call than after. Okay, let's go on to the next topic then. We have 8 minutes left. Can we extend by about 15 minutes? Do people have time?
Fine with me.
Yeah.
That's fine for me.
Okay. We have some, so I think that I'm going to be focusing on, or I have been focusing on, making a final pass over the JSON LD 1.0 spec. So this is, you know, making sure that all of our I's are dotted and our T's are crossed and the document flows well and we're not introducing terms before we, you know, use them in the prose. Just a whole bunch of nitpicky editorial stuff. I've been able to get all the way through the beginning of the spec through Section 5, which is the basic concepts. Advanced concepts is next. Marcus mentioned that... Marcus mentioned that we should really align the editors, make sure that we know what edits are being made or what edits we think we're going to make before the final pass, and that's a good idea. So this topic is to kind of discuss that, what changes we think still need to be made editorially, both general high level and specific changes. Okay. So, as I was going through the front of the spec, most of it was okay. There were some grammatical issues that were changing. One of the things that I noticed, though, is that the spec's been rearranged in such a way where I think we're using terminology before we introduce it at all in the spec. Specifically, this happened when we moved the JSON-LD data model to the end of the spec. It used to be at the beginning of the spec, and we outlined what the data model was. But now we don't do that, and we start using terminology in the data model very early in the spec that requires people to jump down at the bottom of the spec. I don't really know how I feel about that because the terminology that we use is fairly, you can understand it without seeing the definition. It's not so far out there, but there are certain things like node definition that we use before it's introduced that might be problematic. I left it as is for now.
Well, we used to have the term definitions up in the sort of the vocabulary terms at the top. And as I recall, we moved them down into the appendix because we felt that the appendix or the grammar section was much more of a normative section, and it made sense to have definitions within the normative section, at least where the definition points to.
Yeah, I'm not saying it was the wrong decision. I'm saying that it leads to a kind of a weird read, the spec. It feels sloppy to me now, whereas before it was fairly clean. I don't know what the best way to resolve it is. We could leave it and see if anyone complains. It used to be that the spec could be read from beginning to end without having to jump around. That's no longer the case. And a lot of specs kind of end up in this state by the end of the editing cycle because you end up reshuffling stuff to make the conceptual introduction easier. So one option is that we don't use the terminology in the end of the spec and we use more general JSON terminology, like instead of saying term, we say the key in the JSON object, but that introduces ambiguity and is not quite the proper thing to do.
Well, we should also be consistent, and I think that, for instance, some places we use key of the JSON object, some places we use term, which sort of really does mean something different. Mm-hmm. And I think there's another case where we use something else in the API spec.
Yeah.
So I think there probably is a pass that's required to at least make sure we're using consistent things, as well as key when we're talking about sort of just looking at a JSON object, and term when we're talking about some semantic element. But with regards to the general notion of having a flow, I think most of us are probably used to reading these things, in a web browser, and you can click on the definitions and go back and forth easily enough.
The other problem is that sometimes we have to repeat things because we define some parts in the beginning and then define some more details later on.
Yeah.
Sometimes it would be simpler to combine certain sections into one section so that you can, for example, specifying the type, you have one section which handles both the class type and the data type.
Yeah, so that was the biggest objection I had to the changes to the spec, is the combination of these sections. I do realize that it makes it easier to coalesce all of the concepts in the same place, but it has made reading the spec, it used to be a fairly gradual learning curve, reading through the spec. Now it's a fairly bumpy ride, meaning like we introduce everything about the context, that's the first thing that they see, and it's really complicated for someone that doesn't know anything about JSON-LD, because the first, you know, couple of paragraphs are fairly simple, you know, this is how terms work, you know, you have a short name and it expands out into IRI, and then we just dump everything about the context, like mixing multiple contexts together and, you know, nested contexts and all that kind of stuff, we just dump on them.
It should be an advanced concepts.
Yeah, exactly right. I really disagree with the path where we just give them, you know, both barrels effectively when they're just starting out in the spec. And I think, Marcus, that's the reason the spec was split into two different parts there. We had some stuff that was just basic concepts, and then the advanced concepts like nested contexts and things like that. We're in the advanced section because those are very advanced, you know, topics. So I do not think we should coalesce the spec any more than has already been done. And in fact, I think certain things might need to be split out again. I felt very, very uneasy reading the spec this last time and seeing, you know, things that are fairly advanced things just show up in the context section at the very beginning of the spec.
Well, for example, you're probably referencing to expanded term definitions, for instance, but while we did introduce them in advanced tech, in advanced features, but we did use them in almost every example we had in basic concepts. So,
yeah.
I mean, it doesn't make much sense to put it in advanced concepts when we use it ourselves in basically every single example in the basic concepts.
That's not necessarily the one that I was concerned about. I think it was the IRI section that I was more concerned about. Hold on, let me look at exactly which bit that was an issue. Yeah, so in IRI, we introduced using the null keyword to ignore data. That totally should not be in the introductory section. I mean, we introduce, and even the expanded IRI definition is probably okay, but type coercion being introduced in the IRI definition, definitely not. I totally disagree with that.
I didn't move that.
Oh, okay. Well, then
the thing I moved there was the null thing, because @vocab is defined in the IRI section, which was weird, but moving @null somewhere else didn't make any sense, because you can't, well, you might, I mean,
can I,
it was kind of mentioned in a...
Are we using the queue, or is the queue
Sorry. Yeah, no, the queue is relevant. Sorry, Nicholas, go ahead. You're on there probably from a very long time ago.
Oh, no. If I am, you can rope me.
Okay, Craig.
Okay,
so I think there's two issues here. One is sort of editorial coordination, and what seems to be a need for us to communicate before we start making big changes unilaterally. And I think there might be a little more harmony if we sort of discuss an approach together and get a general agreement before we proceed on pretty large changes. The second would be the specifics of this and what the form of the syntax document should be. And I do believe that when we approached this, it did have a pretty nice flow all the way up until advanced concepts. And that is something that we need to get back to. And if that means simplifying examples so that they're not importing advanced concepts, or deciding, well, maybe these, if they're used so much, they're not in fact advanced concepts, that we should be consistent in that regard, and then try to leave the more bloody detail into Section 6.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree completely with that. And that's, I think we've stepped away from that in the syntax spec, and I don't like that we've done that. So specifically example 14, showing how to ignore vocab. And then the expanded IRI definition I'm actually okay with in the IRI section. And then type coercion definitely does not belong in the introduction to IRIs, I don't think. Maybe it does. I don't know. I'd have to take another look, pass over it.
Well, I think you need to explain enough that shows the simple form we're trying to get at, for instance, where the value of FOF name is home page is an IRI, say, rather than spelled out. Because that is one of the things that we're trying to convey is an important part of JSON-LD. So you're not going to get there without some description, even though it might not be entirely complete, that the values space for different properties can be changed within the context.
Mm-hmm.
But it might be that the actual details of how that's done are pushed out into the advanced concepts,
mm-hmm.
as long as the concept is introduced.
There's another part in the in introducing the context where we tell people how to do how to link reference a context using the HTTP header, the link header stuff, and that's just too much up front, I feel. It's important to note that maybe and then point to the advanced thing, but you know that. Yeah. Anyway, that's the biggest concern I have about some of the editorial changes that have been made to the syntax spec is that we're too complicated too early in the spec, and we need to go back to gentle introduction to how all this stuff works. Any other thoughts on that sort of editorial work?
Well, I mean, what would you put then in basic concepts?
What would I put in basic concepts? So I think it's a question of what would I move out of basic concepts to the advanced section. So let's see. Sample JSON-LD document. Is a little the example is a little complicated. The nose is a little complicated there. I'd rather keep it up to the three line thing. So I'm looking at example 1, section 5, basic concepts. So I think the basic example needs to be simplified, maybe to the thing that's on our homepage.
So it used to be there was a design section. Goals and rationale, link data. I perhaps that went away when we decided that.
Section 2.
Okay. Yeah. Sorry.
Yeah. It's there, but we got rid of.
Yeah, it just got a lot smaller.
We took single pass processing out. Why?
Well, because the algorithms basically don't do that.
But you can still do a single pass over the document. You don't need to read the entire document in and then make a whole other pass. There are JSON-LD documents that you can do a single pass over efficiently, right?
Well, as soon as you introduce property generators, that's not really true.
I don't know.
There's a class of documents for which you can do a single pass, but you can't know in advance if you're a conforming processor whether you're going to be able to do a single pass or not. So to be conforming, you can't really do it being purely single pass.
Well, I guess I'm trying to tell people that they can use JSON-LD to subset of JSON-LD to do single pass processing. So for people that need to stream data, that they can still use JSON-LD.
But how
does it? As long as they control. Well, some
there's no conformance requirements for a single pass processor or a document which is single passable. It's like we could create RDFA that was you could do in a single pass, but you can construct things, for instance. Well, actually, you can do it in a single pass, but it's possible to do something. Yeah, it's possible. If you include the vocabulary expansion part, it's not. Now, that JSON or RDFA provided for that by making vocabulary expansion optional. Mm-hmm. And arguably, the copying is, the pattern copying is multi-pass. It's just as of over a digested amount of the data.
Well, yeah, I would argue that it's single pass, the way that the latest stuff is, you know, designed. You can do it in a single pass. You have to hold a lot of stuff in memory, but that doesn't mean it's not single pass.
Yeah.
Right. So yeah. I think that was the same approach that I was taking with the JSON-LD stuff, is that you sometimes have to, you could end up holding the entire document in memory. But if it's structured correctly, it's single pass and it's fairly lightweight and it doesn't use a lot of memory. You just have to make sure that the incoming document is structured in such a way that it doesn't have to remember as much as it it just doesn't have to remember that much.
Well, that's true for anything, because you by that definition you can parse into a parse tree, and then you can go over it. That's the single pass, and then you just iterate over, you go back and forth on the parse tree. I'm not sure whether that is what people mean by single pass, typically.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well...
Single pass to me, I guess I interpret as being like stream processor, where I can, as I'm reading the document, I can emit statements. And,
right.
Of course, JSON sort of tacitly can't do that because there's no ordering of objects. Of keys within objects. So, I'm not sure how much sense it really makes to say that.
Mm, okay. All right. So, I guess we'll keep that out of there. It was one of the features that I thought was kind of nice.
There might be another way to describe the general concept of what you're saying without saying that it's single pass.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. We can talk about that more.
Okay. Let's see. Conformance. Going back to Marcus's question, what would happen in the basic concept section? I think the first example needs to be simpler, and that will make the second example much simpler. The introduction of the context needs to be simpler. So I think it's good to reference the JSON-LD context. Example 5, the inline context definition is good. Using multiple contexts, I don't know if we really need to introduce that in that early. Scope context within node objects, absolutely not. Combining external and local contexts, absolutely not. That's advanced. Referencing context from JSON documents, no, it's advanced. So all of that stuff gets put into the advanced section, and that makes introduction of the context fairly simple. In the IRI section, looking at example 10, example 10 is good. Example 11 is good. Example 12... I don't think we need, because we talk about queries later on in the document. So if we use queries as an example in the rest of the section, we should just not do that. Example 13 is actually pretty good, I think. That should stay in there. Example 14, using the null keyword to ignore data, should not be in this section. It should be moved to the advanced section. Expanded IRI...
Woke up more basic than... Curious, for example.
I feel that it is. I think people would end up using a vocab more readily than they, at least in RDFA, people would use vocab more readily than they would use a query, I think. At least that's...
They
probably recognize it from the light patterns.
Yeah.
Schema org explicitly, because light includes prefixes.
And if that's not true, then I would argue that we need to move vocab to the advanced section. But I don't think it's that advanced. I don't think it's so far advanced that we couldn't put it in the introductory section. Example 15, expanded IRI definition, I think is fine. It's a bit on the border. It's a bit complex, but I think it's okay. Type coercion is definitely an advanced feature. Section 5.3, node identifiers, I don't think there's any way of getting around it, and I think it's fairly easy to understand. Section 5.4, specifying a type, example 18 is good, example 19 is good, example 20 I think is good. 5.5, string internationalization, I think it's mostly good. I'm a bit concerned about example 22, clearing the default language.
The question is, like, for example, string internationalization, is that really a basic concept? I mean, most applications probably don't need that.
That's true. I mean, it could be that we could move string internationalization out to the advanced section. I'd buy that argument. So, yeah, I mean, we could just move the entirety of the string internationalization section into the advanced section.
And the same applies to typing as well. It's a bit special, but still, I mean.
I think the type thing is simple enough that we can keep it in the basic section. Like, it's not going to be this, like, huge, complex thing. And I think people do tend to type their objects. I mean, the idea of typing your object is a fairly, like, if you're doing any kind of programming, you're used to that.
You're talking about typing and not data typing, but regular typing.
Not data typing, just regular typing. Like, this is a person, this is an event, this is a restaurant.
Yeah, it's in schema.org, it's paramount, so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, with microdata, you can't do anything without them.
Right. Yep, so I think that should stay in the basic section. Marcus, that's I think the answer to your question. Those are the things I would change in the basic section to make it easier to understand. And I can go through and make those changes if everyone agrees that that's in general what we want to do.
They sounded good to me. They looked like
I agree. Most of them. I wouldn't like to move that referencing context from JSON documents to advanced concepts, for example. But yeah, that's just a minor detail. And I wouldn't like to separate add vocab from setting or resetting a term.
Okay. So you would rather it would be moved to the advanced section,
or
and
keep
that
it together,
stuff be kept together, or keep it together in the basic section.
Yeah, because setting it to null just makes sense if you have ad vocab, or, well, you have a
well,
previous definition.
Well, no, I'm not sure about that. I mean, setting it to null is something to do to override something, but vocab is more likely to be used in a scenario where they're not creating term definitions. If I was doing something that was just simply working with a schema vocabulary, all I need to do is introduce a context with vocab. I certainly wouldn't have to worry about the context of other terms and setting them to null, which is definitely an advanced concept.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you don't want to expand everything sometimes. For example, that database ID, which is in the example.
Which example?
Example 14.
But I still think that's advanced, and I agree that the basic vocab is for someone knowing schema org and just putting out just with the data they have already expressed. So I'd be fine to move example 14 to advanced, but keeping example 13 in the simple.
Okay.
Yeah,
I think.
Okay.
I think maybe keeping prefix expansion could be usable in the basic, but I could go either way. It's more that we have that in light as well, but I don't know.
Okay.
I think that the simple use of JSON-LD is probably using terms and not queries.
Yeah, that's true. It's more
and Mono's experience is that people don't like queries. Certainly with regards to terms, there's a big disincentive for using them. Mm-hmm. Or rather for the keys.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, so any other input on those changes? I believe that I'm going to be going over advanced concepts. It's probably going to be the weekend before I can get to making these changes. But the advanced concepts are easier in that, like, you know, they're kind of the fire hose of the spec. You're just introduced to everything. I'm hoping, I haven't looked at it, but they used to be organized in the simplest advanced concept to the most advanced, you know, concept. And I think they're still kind of organized like that. And if they're not, we might want to shift them around. But some of them are like parallel in how complex they are. Like, you know, are sets and lists really less complicated than embedding? Is embedding less complicated than named graphs? They probably sit at kind of the same level. Nicholas, you're on the queue.
Yeah, just a hunch. If it's hard to compare the relative advancedness following the same sequence as in basic concepts, could be good so that the advanced just expand on each point in sequence.
Okay. Sorry. Yeah, that is a good idea. Very good idea.
Another question I had was whether data model and the grammar should really be an appendix, because those are basically the only two normative sections, or at least the only two sections that contain normative statements. So shouldn't we make them normal sections instead of an appendix?
Good question.
It sounds so. I think you're right.
I like them. I like the fact that they're pushed all the way to the back of the document and that you don't need to read them to get a basic understanding of JSON-LD. I like the idea that they're kind of these afterthoughts. They're very important. You know, they're normative. They're incredibly important, but they are very much just kind of like it should be an afterthought to someone just using JSON-LD, the simplest form of JSON-LD, or even some of the advanced concepts.
I mean, that can stay at the end, just transform it to regular sections instead of being appendix.
Yeah, I don't know. I think the appendix is appropriate for this, and I think we had some discussion in the RDF working group about if it was appropriate to have normative appendices. Or perhaps it was just with individuals. But I think the consensus was there was no problem with having normative appendices. And in fact, that there are some documents where the only normative statements are in appendices.
Yeah.
I don't know. It just looks a bit weird if all the normative statements are in appendices, because normally that's where you put, I don't know, additional information or something like that.
Well, I think if the syntax document was sort of like a regular spec, in the sense that it wasn't also trying to be an introduction, then that might be different. But it's considered to be the primary entry point for people that are going to be coming to this, and And I think that was sort of the determination we made for putting it back there. And I actually think it works pretty well, other than the issue of having terms, definitions being at the very end, and that maybe there's some way to hit at them early on, at least, so that someone knows. Because some people may print this out and actually, you know, read it on paper.
What?
So at least you might know to go bookmark something.
maybe we can print out a big arrow that's and put bookmark on the on it and have them insert it in the back of the document so that they can easily flip to the back when they need to. That can be the first page. Yeah, it's an issue. Marcus, I could go either way on it. A lot of this, it doesn't have anything to do with my feeling on it. Doesn't necessarily have to do with an editorial issue. It has more to do with the general way that web standards are written. I think that by and large, web standards are incredibly hard to understand, and I think that is. We do that to the detriment of web standards, meaning that a lot of them use incredibly complex language to define concepts that are fairly simple. And I really think that web standards should be doing should be making things as simple as possible. Use very simple language. Use very do very gentle introductions. Don't get technical if you don't have to. And really the technical complexity of this stuff should be concentrated and at the end because the implementers can kind of look at that stuff and read it. So fundamentally, I think this kind of information should be in an appendix. The set of instructions to implementers should be in an appendix. And you refer to the appendix whenever you have a very technical question. Otherwise, the main body of the work is, you should be able to get an understanding of the technology from the main body of the work. Anyway, that's my argument for having an appendix, but if consensus is that we should make them regular sections, I'm fine with it.
Well, I feel it should be an appendix, too.
I don't have a strong opinion. It just looks a bit weird, but
yeah.
I'm fine with it.
Okay.
Well, in any case, that if we were to decide to move it out after last call, that would just simply be an editorial change.
Yeah, exactly. And if we get feedback from folks that are like, this is weird, this doesn't make sense, or it was confusing to me, then we can, change it without having to go to another last call, as Greg said. So discussion about. Okay, sorry, we are way over. There is one last thing that we should discuss very quickly, unless folks have to go. Hopefully this will be a fairly short discussion, but it might turn into a long one, at which point we'll just end the call. Marcus raised the point, this was kind of triggered with a change that Marcus had made to the editor-author list, a couple of days ago. He had asked me offline if we really should have Mark Burbeck in as an author of the spec, since he really hasn't participated at all in the mailing list or any of the stuff since the very beginning. I'm okay with removing him as an author if we really call out that the basis of the JSON-LD work built on top of RDFJ. So we used a lot of the core concepts in RDFJ. I mean, there were really fundamental things. Like, and the reason that he was in the author section is because I pulled, I think, 5 or 6 paragraphs from the RDFJ spec at the very beginning of the JSON-LD work, but those paragraphs have long been replaced, and we don't even use the functionality or the features there. But
can we give them a paragraph in acknowledgments?
Yeah, I think that's what we should do. We should make it very clear that this work was heavily inspired by the RDFJ work. So that's one. And then the other one was that Marcus had shifted Dave Longley from being the second author to being one of the last authors. And I think you did that, Marcus, correct me if I'm wrong, based on the number of commits that Dave Longley has made to the source repo and the amount of emails that have been exchanged on the mailing list and discussion with issue tracking stuff. I was concerned that that was very unfair to Dave Longley, because the vast majority of the early work, and we're talking a year before we even published this thing as a public spec, you know, a lot of that stuff Dave Longley was heavily, heavily involved with. All of the initial algorithms were his algorithms. He worked through compaction and expansion and all that kind of stuff. So I felt very uneasy about shifting him down on the authors list. So here's the list of contributors, right? I felt, and you can clearly see Dave Longley does not have a lot of commits, but I don't think we should base authorship solely on the number of commits that somebody has put in. So I think the discussion here is, what do we believe the fair ordering of the editors and the authors are for the JSON-LD 1.0 spec and the JSON-LD 1.0 API spec is. And I say that knowing that these types of conversations are very awkward conversations to have, but I think we should have this conversation, because I think primarily Marcus has done a fantastic amount of work especially in the last half year, and also because you know, the way that things work in the academic settings, the place that you appear on the editors or the authors list matters in academia. So I guess the question is, where do we want Dave Longley to appear on this list? That affects everybody else's position as well. And where do we want Marcus to appear on this list, both in the authors list and the editors list? Any input on this before I kind of propose an order and see if people agree?
Well, I guess, I mean, Marcus has done a lot of work, and that's great, and I can see that there's value in him to be in place, and I would be happy to swap positions with Marcus. I do note, looking at the commits, that Marcus has almost twice as many commits as I do anyway, although I have more lines of code changed, apparently. And then, Mono, you're behind that. So you could argue that Marcus should be the first author, except I think that it's not simply a matter of who's putting work in there, because there's more to it. There's more to putting this through than simply writing, right? You have to know, you know, what to write, what to change, what not to write. And Manu, you certainly have the most experience with regards to previous spec work. So anyway, that's I can understand why it's a charge thing. I feel I want to be known for the contributions I've made to this, but I think after the first editor, usually that's all you see anyway. It's first editor at all.
we should specifically not list our specs like that. I hate it when specs are listed like that. So I think all of the, you know, there's a certain amount of unfairness that goes into how these things are cited. And they are not representative of all the work that everyone put in. So, you know, no matter what order we come up with, there are going to be people that are going to be unhappy with it. And it's because it is fundamentally unfair to list you know, editors and authors, and only list the editors, only list the authors, and vice versa. To give a data point, you know, I've been involved with the RDFA work since the very, very, you know, since very early days, and my name does not appear at all in the editors. There's no authors list. It appears once at the very end of the document, you know, as these were the members of the RDFA working group. So I think we certainly want something that is a lot more fair than that, while respecting all of the work that everyone has put in. This kind of discussion is not an easy discussion to have. I can propose something, but I'm proposing it as just a here's an idea, not, you know, I'm going to be angry if this is not the order of things, just to kind of get the discussion started. Let me finish scribing what Greg said. So looking at the contributors list, and this is not solely what the decision is based on, but let's look at the contributors list. Yeah, Dave Lane is saying we could always fall back to alphabetical order. I think that is wrong. I don't agree with that approach to things, because that's throwing your hands up and saying, well, we don't want to actually have the hard discussion on who contributed ideas and editorial work for this stuff. And I think fundamentally it's unfair to the people that did the most amount of work versus other people that didn't do as much work. Okay. So Jason LD10, Nicholas, we added you to the authors list, just FYI, because you've been, you know, at many of these meetings. I think your thinking has shaped the spec throughout, you know, the time that the group has been active. So you're on the authors list now. Mark's been removed. I think the order in the Jason LD syntax document is fine as is. I think the JSON LD algorithms and API specs should change. I think perhaps Marcus should go as the primary editor on the algorithms spec, but I don't know if that's the right thing to do. I think perhaps Greg, you should go second, and I should go third. And then for the authors, Dave Longley, I believe, should go first, because he is the basis of all of the algorithms that we're talking about, except the to and from RDF algorithm, which was all Greg. Greg should go up one in the, and then for the last three, I'm actually uncertain. I think Greg and Marcus have done way more API work in the last couple of months than I have done. I would argue that maybe they have done more API work than, I don't know if they've done more API work than I've done since the inception of the spec. I think that's a little, I'm on the fence with that. And then Greg, I don't know if you have, Greg and Marcus, I don't know what you guys feel would be fair here.
Well, I guess the book hasn't quite been finished being written on the algorithms yet, has it? So we'll see. I think certainly, I know Dave and I did a lot, Dave did a lot of work. I cribbed from him. We had a lot of back and forth. Marcus has come in and lately made quite a lot of change. We all have quite a lot of contributions. I think there's probably some natural tendency to to remember the more recent contributions and not weigh as heavily what happened early on. Because Mono, I really don't know what your direct involvement with regards to implementing the algorithms were by the time I really got involved, because I think you'd been doing it for a good year before I came on.
And actually, it's Dave Longley that has been implementing all the algorithms. I basically looked at the source code he had and transferred them into human text, but the person that actually wrote all of the core algorithms is Dave Longley.
So I would suggest that with regard to authorship, Dave should be first. Marcus and I should be in the second and third positions, and Manu, perhaps you should be come after that, but that's sort of just based upon my sort of sense as to relative contributions.
Yep, I agree with that. And then the question becomes your and Marcus's contribution, which one's listed first. We could
I think
in the editors we swap places from the authors, but I don't know if that...
Well, I think the editors probably, from a academic point of view, is a more important role, and I can see that might be something that has a lot of value for Marcus academically. So perhaps what we do is put Marcus first in the editors, and then I would come before Marcus and the authors, and that might be a way to sort of indicate some balance in that. I don't know, Marcus, what do you think?
Yeah, that would be certainly fine for me.
Okay, so in authors would be Dave, Greg, Marcus. Okay, and that would be for the APS spec. What do folks think about that order, for both for the syntax spec and the API spec?
Yeah.
Okay, so we have consensus on that order.
And then we should be sure that we've hit the acknowledgments appropriately as well, but although perhaps we don't have to do that right away.
We should do it so we don't forget, because acknowledgments can be, it's like one of the last things you end up looking at. And I am guilty of accidentally leaving Nicholas off of the acknowledgments section when we did the first public draft of the spec. So.
No worries. I'm very grateful being included in the authors list, since, well, I have written very little text here in the document. But I feel I have contributed in discussion
invaluably.
And shaping.
Yes,
absolutely.
That's the reason you're added.
Stefan and is probably should be in the acknowledgments, and probably Yvonne, based upon some of his contributions with regards to RDF transformation.
Mm-hmm.
True. Yes.
Okay, good. That wasn't nearly as painful as I thought it was going to be. Okay, that's the call for today. Sorry for taking the call 40 minutes over time, but we resolved a bunch of good things. So, all right, we'll chat next week where we try and figure out this algorithm stuff.
Cool. Right. Yes.
Take care, guys. Right. Have a good weekend.
Bye. You too.
Bye.
Thank you.
Bye. Bye.